It is 24 minutes to 2 on this Monday afternoon. Plenty of time for your feedback this hour, 133 882. And just on the subject of youth crime, having just spoken to Ben Cannon and seeing so much of your feedback come through this afternoon, I'd love to now discuss both of these incidents on 4BC Afternoons with Calvin Ginnick. You know, he's a station sponsor, but he's also a former police officer and now is a criminal lawyer, and he's the managing director of Ginnick and Associates. So I think he has an understanding of this certainly more holistically than I do. So it's great to have him back on the program. Good afternoon to you, Calvin.
Good afternoon, Sophie.
I am sure you are well aware of what is making headlines today and the ongoing frustration in Queensland right across the community. And I think what hits so close to home, particularly with these incidents at Redbank Plains and on the Gold Coast, Calvin, is there is this overwhelming sense in our community that it literally could happen to any of us.
Yes, it's starting to look that way, isn't it? It's certainly been ramped up over the last sort of 12 months to 24 months in regards to youth crime. I think I've said to you both before, Sophie, that there isn't, to be fair to authorities, there isn't an easy fix to this. It doesn't appear anyone across the world has solved this problem. And primarily, it must date back to a social issue rather than a justice issue, meaning that by the time these young offenders come into contact with authorities in any way, they've already lost any respect for parents, teachers, or anyone within the community, and that includes police and the courts.
By all accounts, for this particular case of the stabbing attack and now the subsequent loss of life of an innocent grandmother, Calvin, and it's one of the things Ben has mentioned with me, by all accounts in this particular case, there is a video that police have called abhorrent and extremely violent. And Ben has wondered, and I think many people do, why it takes so long for these kinds of cases to go through the courts to the point of a conviction. It is excruciating for the victims of violence in this state when there is a protracted legal system that means that, you know, we've got a video, we can see it actually happening before our very eyes, and yet it might be 2 or 3 years before we have a sentence.
Yeah, I don't have a solution to that, but it certainly is a issue with the justice system everywhere. I think I spoke to you earlier in the year, last year, Sophie, in regards to one of these issues. An example I used was the Whiskey A Go-Go prosecution from the 70s. Within 3 months, there had been a jury trial and a conviction. Within about 6 months, the matter had been on appeal through to the Court of Appeal. And today, that would be, as you say, 2, 3, 4 years for that to occur. I think it's simply just down to the way that things occur, the process, and also the resources. I was in court only earlier in the year to list a matter, and you know, there's no court dates available to get listings in the next 6 months.
It doesn't paint a pretty picture, does it? Because the crime certainly isn't abating.
No, it's increasing, and that's what I think the overall problem is. When we talk about things back in the 70s, the amount and the figures and the population, et cetera, have increased significantly since then. And unfortunately, the seriousness of the crime and the amount of people in custody, both as young offenders and adults, has increased significantly as well.
We were sold last year by the former Premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, these, what we were told, tough laws were made even tougher here in Queensland when it came to youth crime, that they would be receiving harsher punishments and that the community needed to be protected. At the time, she said, "My government is listening and we are acting." Today, current Premier Stephen Miles sort of shied away from it. He said, you know, it really is up to police and to the judiciary to do their job. I'm not sure exactly what that means. But the new measures we were told last year were the increasing of maximum penalties, for example, for stealing a car went from 7 to 10 years, Calvin, that there would be more severe penalties, 14 years if the offence was committed at night or if the offender threatened violence or used violence or was armed, as we've seen this weekend, you know, these kids carrying knives like it's no big deal. They amended the Youth Justice Act to take into account previous bail history, criminal activity and track record. Now, number 4, increased penalties for criminals who boast about their crimes on social media, then went on to say that we were going to have extreme high visibility police patrols. I don't think there'd be many communities who'd put their hand up to say they're seeing that. They were spending more money on fast-tracking sentences. There would be 2 new youth detentions, engine immobilisers in some of the areas with the highest issues, Mount Isa, Cairns and Townsville, and the appointment of a QPS assistant commissioner in the position of Youth Crime Task Force commander, as well as increased penalties to adult as well as juvenile offenders. If I can go back to four with you, in your experience and anything that you've seen come across your desk, have we seen a young criminal who has posted on social media, and they are, receive an increased penalties, to your knowledge?
So the answer is no, not to my knowledge. I had this discussion only this morning in regards to this type of matter with people within the legal industry. And my understanding is there's 160-odd charges or offenders that have been charged with that new provision. It's a circumstance of aggravation that applies to unlawful use of a motor vehicle. So it increases it, as you've said, Sophie, from 10 years to 12 years if they can demonstrate that they're gloating on social media. So the charge is definitely being laid, but it appears the bigger impact is on bail rather than on sentence itself. Increasing maximum penalties rarely, in my experience, demonstrates some significant increase in penalties. Still, what happens is the court, quite rightly, takes into account all the circumstances, the seriousness of the offence, and then imposes a penalty. And a large majority of penalties for offences never even reach perhaps even 30% or 40% of the maximum penalty. Unlawful uses, I would suggest, a significant amount of penalties fall within the category of probation and community service orders or wholly suspended sentences. And then those higher penalties are left for the recidivist offenders. So rarely does a single offence get anywhere near a maximum penalty. And doing so, there's not a lot of utility, in my experience, in simply increasing penalties. I was just going to say, but I am advised that, and in my experience, that change in legislation has had an effect on bail, meaning that young offenders that engage in that type of reckless behaviour is taken seriously by the courts, more so in regards to bail.
Okay, and then the question would be how many of them are remanded on bail and how many of them go to, you know, some other facility in terms of bail, and whether or not they're actually, you know, being policed 24/7 so we know where they are and what they're doing when they're out on bail. The question then is that neither side of politics will commit to minimum mandatory sentence, or that you know that if you commit a crime, there will be a consequence and it is going to be at the minimum X. And so many people, Calvin, you know, ring me and say, that's what we need. There needs to be a circuit breaker. Something needs to change. Is that too simplistic a solution here? Or is it something that really one level of government, one side of government in Queensland is going to have to step up and say, yeah, we'll look at minimum mandatory sentencing?
Very difficult question, Sophie. Again, I don't know whether anything is a known explicit solution to this type of problem. I note back in 2011, the Queensland Sentencing and Advisory Council were specifically tasked to conduct a review on the benefits and arguments against mandatory sentencing, and that report was handed down, I believe the chair at the time was former Judge Robertson, not in favour of introducing mandatory sentencing on the basis that mandatory sentencing in itself is a cause of injustices occurring and that courts can't take into account individual circumstances and imposing a discretion over an offence. But at the same time, there were a number of favourable arguments put into place in that it's consistency in sentencing rather than a variation or an undesirable variation, and obviously also that it would deter individuals from offending. Now, there are experts in the field that are not of that opinion, that mandatory sentencing assists in deterring others, and there obviously are some that are of the view that it does.
I would love to ask you what you think needs to happen, Calvin, if there is some sort of idea of what we can do that may actually bend the needle with what we continue to discuss over and over and over again. And I would like to take some of the listener feedback with you when we return after this break. So if you'd like to speak with me and Calvin, jump on the open line 133 882. We'll continue to this discussion when we return. It's 14 minutes to two.
Jax, what's more outstanding than winning Canstar's Outstanding Value Home and Contents Insurance Award once?
What, Sarge?
When you win it for a whopping 7 years in a row.
Ooh. That is outstanding.
Budget Direct, Canstar's National Award for Outstanding Value Home and Contents Insurance, 7 years in a row.
Insurance solved with Budget Direct.
Issue Auto and General Insurance Company Limited. Read PDS, TMD and awards info at budgetdirect.com.au to see your product suit. Individual circumstances and policy terms may vary. Compare for yourself.
Now, you may have heard that the NRL Telstra Premiership season is going to kick off on American soil. You can be there to witness the 2024 season opening doubleheader. Get ready to pack your bags because the Sea Eagles and the Rabbits, the Roosters and the Broncos will go head-to-head live from the world's greatest arena, Allegiant Stadium, Las Vegas, less than a month away, March 2nd. It's a Saturday. What a trip. So if you can be spontaneous, jump online and have a look at the travel packages that are available. Tickets to the games, flights, accommodation, you can see them at nrl.com/Vegas. Rugby League Las Vegas, presented by Fiji Airways. They are selling out fast. Put your name on a wait list or have a look at what's available and book now. nrl.com/Vegas.
Welcome aboard. We kindly ask all passengers to fasten their seatbelts. Preparing for departure.
Recline with three rows of comfort. Indulge in seamless, convenient tech and let a 5-star ANCAP safety rating give you extra peace of mind. For a limited time only, enjoy a $2,000 factory bonus. Visit your nearest showroom today. The Hyundai Palisade Luxury SUV. Welcome to first class. Imagine that. Hyundai.
I'm Andrew Lofthouse. Watch 9 News at 6 for today's biggest stories from across the southeast: Brisbane, Logan, the Gold Coast, Caboolture and Ipswich. We have every region covered, plus the latest in sport and TV's most comprehensive weather forecast. 9 News at 6.
Life is busy around here, and a lot of things I can't control. But what I can control is my smart ducted system from Tritec Air Conditioning. With my Air Zone Control, I can control the temperature in different rooms throughout the house with a touch of the screen. And with the My Place app, I can even cool my bedroom on my way home from work on a hot night.
For a ducted system in your home, trust Tritec Air Conditioning, a family business with 30 years experience. TritecAirConditioning.com.au. And remember, don't sweat it, Tritec it.
Made in Brisbane, for Brisbane. You're listening to Sophie Formica on 882 4BC.
Calvin Ganek, Managing Director of Ganek & Associates, criminal lawyer, is my guest this afternoon. And given that Calvin is also a former police officer, I think he does have a unique perspective. And Calvin, we often hear this, you know, that we know police are finding themselves, and we heard today from the gentleman who was, you know, two cars were stolen by kids with knives on the Gold Coast. This idea that police know who a lot of these young criminals are and feel powerless in some cases to really do anything about it. Or, yes, yeah, send us your footage. They see the footage and they go, yep, we know who they are. What do we do to address that problem? And that it seems really unfair, I think, when politicians go, police and the judiciary need to do more. Like, are we doing enough from a legislative perspective in Queensland to make a difference here?
Sophie, I don't know whether it's a legislative reform that needs to be done, because that's been tried multiple times. You've already identified the legislative changes last year. Without trying to be the preacher of the solution to the problem, because I certainly am not, it really has to be a balance between the social issues that I talk about, having good role models at a younger age, from parents to family, et cetera, and then a balance between rehabilitation. What I mean by that is those young people that have stepped out of line at the beginning before they become recidivist offenders, there is a really good opportunity for intervention at that point in time. So you can't just turn a blind eye to the rehabilitation of the process. And then at the same time, there needs to be tough laws for the protection of the community, for those offenders that just continue to reoffend and don't have any respect for the laws that exist. And, you know, the prime example is we arrive at what unfortunately has happened on the weekend. So it's a combination of all of those things, and the balance has to be right. And hopefully once that's achieved, there's some good results heading in the right direction.
Michael's on the line from Cannon Hill. I think in particular, Michael, I liked your suggestion about how we more broadly look at where these kids are from, if you'd like to make your comment for Kelvin.
Yeah, thank you, Sophie. Thank you, Kelvin. Kelvin, my thought is, and look, excuse me, I have a lay mind when it comes to legislation, but how simple is it to put in legislation that these kids that commit the crimes are held financially accountable for all costs involved, including the hourly rate for a police officer or a paramedic and so forth? And if they're not held responsible, maybe held the parents responsible for it. Because it's a responsibility for a parent and it's a privilege to be a parent. And if the parents are held responsible, maybe they'll start the disciplining at home at a much better rate.
Thanks, Michael. I mean, Kelvin, this is where we come back to the broader issue of what it means for us as a society.
Yeah, it does. Now, to answer the question, there are provisions that allow that to happen already. So the Youth Justice Act, Section 258, allows for a court on evidence to hold parents responsible for any personal or property offences committed by young people if compensation is to be ordered. So the provision already exists. I guess the difficulty is often the parents are not financially able in that situation to be held accountable because perhaps they don't have their life in order as well. Mm. I'm making a few assumptions here, but to answer the caller's question, there is already the provision available for that to occur. It's rarely used. And again, it is the broader issue. Firstly, that the young person themselves, or even if it's an adult offender, often don't have capacity to pay any compensation to any victims. And that's why there's a process that the government currently have, Victim Assist. And in regards to holding parents accountable, that's difficult in itself as well because it comes back to a social issue.
And sometimes they don't exist. You know, we know that many times we find out about the life of these kids and they have literally been raised like animals and they've raised themselves. And as you said, that's a case-by-case basis, but we know that that's certainly a part of the problem. So, Kelvin, final word for you today. As I said at the outset, you know, I think the great privilege of being able to talk to you is that you see this, you're there every day, you're in and out of the courts, you've also been in and out of understanding what the policing limitations are. If you were the one that could make some suggestions or if you talk to your peers, where are we missing a piece?
I don't think I can answer that truly, Sophie. I can say that everyone seems to be working overtime to try and fix this problem, whether it be Operation Guardian, the courts, and even the lawyers. And some may giggle at that, but the lawyers themselves are doing the hard work in the courts as well to try and get the outcomes from a complete point of view. But I don't think I can identify a missing piece other than I keep coming back to it. I can't emphasise enough, it's a social issue, not a justice issue, because the problem's already in existence and it's much harder to undo it than it is to prevent it in the first place.
It is much harder to undo it than it is to prevent it in the first place. And unfortunately, Kelvin, some of the preventing it in the first place bits are really unpopular to talk about.
That's right.
And no one is willing to step up and say the stuff that I think a lot of people think and feel. And I appreciate your time this afternoon. Sorry for putting you on the spot there and look forward to our future conversations.
No problem. Good afternoon, Sophie.